This is Radio Superior 1943, a reproduction of actual news events with authentic popular music from 1943. This is a true story of our past, so step back with us to another time and hear this recreation of radio as it may have sounded in 1943. We bring you now to the KUWS radio studios at the Superior State Teachers College and the Martin and McKenna Show.
This is radio station KUWS, broadcasting from studios in Superior, Wisconsin. It's 6 o'clock, standard wartime, Wednesday, January 20th, 1943. The Martin and McKenna Show is on the air. This is Jack McKenna reminding you that a slip of the lip can sink a ship. My partner, newsman Lou Martin, is standing by with the latest information regarding the war in the Pacific, in Europe, and here at home. Later in the show, we'll have a special report from none other than Edward R. Murrow. He tagged along on a bombing run over the Third Reich, and that should be interesting. The news is sponsored by the Great Northern Railway Empire Builder from Chicago to Seattle, with a link from the Twin Ports. Now, Lou Martin with the 6 o'clock Great Northern Railway News, and good evening, sir.
Good evening to you, Jack, and good listeners. After 6 months of fighting in some of the worst jungle conditions possible, American forces are apparently on the verge of victory in two southern Pacific battlegrounds. The U.S. Navy reports that heavy Japanese casualties on Guadalcanal in the Solomon Islands. More than 1,000 Nipponese soldiers have been wiped out in 5 days of fighting. A force of Flying Fortresses bombed several Jap transport ships in the Shortland Island area, which were trying to resupply Guadalcanal. A Navy communique says Marines are mopping up around Henderson Field, clearing the area of the enemy. In other jungle action in nearby New Guinea, Allied ground forces have cut up the last remaining Jap garrison in the Papuan Peninsula, capturing the village of San Ananda Point. Two Jap pockets of resistance remain on either side of San Ananda. Jap efforts to resupply these troops failed as P-38 fighter squadrons raided aircraft before they could make their drops. The Japanese offensive in the Bunagona area was intended to take Port Moresby last summer, but has repeatedly stalled against fierce resistance by American and Australian ground forces and heroic air battles by Allied planes. This is the region that Poplar native Richard Bong recorded his 5 kills in a P-38 Lightning twin prop earlier this month to become an ace. Both of these battles are considered stunning turnarounds and the first time Allied forces have not only stopped offensive action in the Pacific, but have regained lost ground, pushing Nipponese forces back toward Tokyo. Other hard-fought war news comes out of the Soviet Union's winter offensive. United Press foreign reporter Henry Cassidy is in Moscow and sent this via shortwave radio earlier today.
Moscow calling. This is Moscow calling. Henry Cassidy reporting. Surging Russian army forces have thrust to within 80 miles of the German-held steel city of Kharkov. This is part of the offensive that pushed Nazi soldiers out of Leningrad and recaptured the Ukraine and the port city of Rostov. This offensive has been pushing German forces westward from areas held in by Hitler's troops for the past 17 months. Several towns in the northern Caucasus have been liberated by the Red Army troops. Calling Allied headquarters in North Africa, calling Wes Gallagher in Tunisia.
This is Allied headquarters North Africa, Wes Gallagher reporting. Axis forces have penetrated 7 miles toward Pont de Fars on the Tunisian front. An Allied headquarters communique says minor engagements continue around that region, and flying fortresses have been enlisted to harass German and Italian tanks and troops in the Tunis area. The Pont de Fars area is held by Free French forces. Calling London, calling correspondent Wall.
This is London, Alfred E. Wall speaking. London was bombed and machine-gunned Wednesday in the largest German daylight raid since the Battle of Britain, and preliminary reports indicated at least 11 of the attacking planes were shot down by British fighters alone. A school was smashed and set afire, and from its wreckage, workers recovered many bodies and dug into the debris for others believed killed or trapped alive. 24 children were killed in this school alone. 2 sections of the city were bombed, and some homes were destroyed. The German attack, under cover of 50 to 100 fighters, who patrolled the channel. It was estimated that 20 to 30 fighter bombers struck inland across Kent and Sussex. They were engaged by RAF fighters and only a few reached London. The planes attacked during the lunch hour, machine-gunned streets and buildings after sweeping across southern England in greater force than any daylight raid in 2 years. This is London, Alfred E. Wall speaking.
Wartime shortages will force more kinds of food to be rationed. The Office of Price Administration has added condensed milk, all jellies and jams, preserves, pickles, relishes, and all processed food that contains meat and shellfish on the rationing list. This is in addition to the recent rationing of canned, dried, and frozen fruit and vegetables. Great Northern Railroad News Time is 6:06. Jack McKenna has a word from our sponsor.
I'm as willing to sacrifice as the next guy, Lou, you know that. But to ration jelly and pickle stuff?
I like pickled beets.
Yeah, I mean, what's life without a good relish? I always say I'm really getting to hate Germany and Japan for this.
Well, some people say that's part of the reason for all this rationing. It's a good incentive to work hard and get the war over with.
Indeed. Well, here's one part of the war that's going on, and it's right close to home. Mr. Marcinak has the answers. Who is Mr. Marcinak? Well, he's there to answer your travel questions. He's a ticket agent for Great Northern Railway, J.J. Marcinak. Transporting fighting men is one of Great Northern's victory assignments. Two, the railway has an obligation to civilians, particularly those who stepped aside for homebound lads in uniform at the year's end. Many then patriotically postponed essential journeys, hoping to travel later. Of course, wartime train travel presents problems and questions. Take yours to an experienced Great Northern passenger representative. He has the answers. You can depend on him. The route of the Empire Builder between Chicago and Portland, Oregon. Great Northern Railway.
A superior man went down with his ship in the Battle of the Solomon Islands last November. And he's home now, on leave, to talk about it. KUWS radio newsman Mike Simonson has the report.
The story is something right out of a storybook, Lou. Lieutenant Glenn Darst was first assigned duty on board the USS Preston December 5, 1941, 2 days before the attack on Pearl Harbor. The Preston saw duty in those early dark days of the war, from the Coral Sea to the Battle of the Solomon Islands, where it met its watery fate on the night of November 15, 1942. Lieutenant Darst says a good portion of the Preston's crew escaped the ship and were able to swim away from the suction from its sinking before it pulled them under. He says Navy training helped them all keep cool. They found rafts as they floated off the sinking ship and were able to tread water for 12 hours before they were finally rescued. They were what Lieutenant Darst called a little tired and hungry afterwards and were all given a month's furlough. He'll have to be getting back to duty in a few days, probably again in the Pacific. People will remember that the Naval Battle of the Solomons was not only a U.S. victory, but it effectively ended the Japanese ability to resupply its troops on Guadalcanal, leading to what could be our first offensive victory against the Japs, Lou.
If anyone thought this would be an easy war, well, they were wrong. There's been a lot of sacrifice by Allies in the Pacific War, and thank you, Mike. The brouhaha over the city manager continues to boil over at the Superior City Hall. After a tumultuous city council meeting last night, including Councilors James Clark and A.D. Weldon walking out, Council President Clarence Kinney led a vote to fire City Manager F.R. Buechner. Mr. Buechner will be replaced by former Mayor George Dietrich. Even so, Mr. Buechner showed up for work today and refused to give up his office to Mr. Dietrich. Yesterday, Judge Carl Daly denied him a temporary injunction, but Mr. Buechner says that he'll wait until the court has ruled on whether or not the council has the right to fire him. Mr. Dietrich has taken a desk in the office of City Attorney George Flynn for the time being. An institution in Ashland County is retiring. Judge James McCauley says that he will not seek re-election and leave office after his term ends in January of 1944. Judge McCauley was first elected as Ashland County Judge in 1893. except for interruptions by military service, he's been on the bench for the past 50 years. Judge McCauley was a lieutenant in the Spanish-American War and a lieutenant colonel in the First World War. He was also the first post commander of the Roy Kelly American Legion Post, starting in 1921. The first group of draftees for 1943 were shipped out of Burnett and Ashland counties yesterday and today. The men were given a gift of cigarettes as they headed out. The Ashland group is going to Milwaukee for their physicals, while the men leaving Siren, Danbury, and Grantsburg were off to Fort Sheridan. The former police chief of Washburn is joining his son by enlisting in the service. 48-year-old William Peterson is part of a special Marine Corps group of veterans who served in the First World War. He's assigned to duty in San Diego. His 18-year-old son, Robert Peterson, is also a private first class in the Marine Corps. He enlisted a year ago, January of 1942, and is now serving in New Caledonia, northeast of Australia. Letters home say that he's okay, but the weather is hot. And finally, Jack, a solemn ceremony at Solon Springs High School will be held tomorrow night. Emblems of honor pins and gold star insignias will be presented by Frank Thompson of Superior. Mr. and Mrs. Cornell Mertzig of Solon Springs and Mr. and Mrs. Sam Moyer of Lake Nebagaman will get emblems of honor. The Mertzigs have 6 sons in the service, and the Moyers have 4. Receiving the gold stars will be Mrs. Paul Brannell of Solon Springs, who lost her son in action. Mrs. James Rogers' husband was killed in action, and the Miller Nichols son, Frank, was killed in the Japanese attack on Pearl Harbor.
A gold star is certainly no replacement for these fine men, Lou, but at least we are remembering them and remembering the very high cost of freedom from this foreign invader. And thanks, Lou Martin, with the Great Northern Railway Empire Builder 6 o'clock news. Friends, that cold spell isn't going anywhere anytime soon. The forecast from the United States Weather Bureau for this January 20th, 1943, is for more very cold weather. Aren't you excited? The low tonight will be around minus 30 degrees. That's dangerously cold, so keep that skin covered and that coal stoked in your furnace, folks. Today's high in Superior was 10 below zero, and tomorrow looks to be much the same as today. Let's get that blood circulating with some good swinging music, eh? Let's start out with Glenn Miller and his orchestra and In the Mood on the Martin and McKenna Show on station KUW. Thank you. Music of Glenn Miller and his orchestra in the mood. Well, we're in the mood for some warm weather around here, but it doesn't look like we're going to get it on this cold midwinter's night here at the head of the lakes. And by the way, good listeners, in case you're concerned, we do have heat in the studio tonight.
So that means you came to an agreement with our man Axel Fennell down in the boiler room.
Axel's a good old boy, Lou. I brought him a jar of pickled herring and some snooze, and he's a happy man.
It's warm in here, but the newsroom is still cold.
So?
I guess I'll be making my journey down to the boiler room this evening.
A little advice, Lou. Stop by the Black Cat Cafe and pick up an egg and onion sandwich.
But I don't care for egg and onion sandwiches.
I don't care if you like eggs and onion sandwiches or not.
My guess is that it is high on Axel Fennell's culinary delight list, all right. Anything else?
He's partial to peanut butter and mayonnaise sandwiches, too.
Well, that's fine, as long as I don't have to watch him eat that stuff.
No, you'll want to leave before Axel starts gnawing. He likes to talk while he eats, and he makes these noises.
And let me pass on a couple of notes to our good listeners, Jack. The director of the Superior Duluth Rent Control Office, Thomas Shevchek, will be the guest speaker before the Board of Realtors. That meeting will be at the Android Hotel tomorrow night at 6 p.m. And if any traveler comes across a small mattress on the road from Superior to Highway 13, the owner needs it back. Contact Mackey's store in Poplar or Charles Leffel in Poplar. There's a reward.
Well, we can assume no one was on the mattress when it landed on Highway 13, at least.
That would be my assumption, Jack.
Lou, I can't wait to hear that report from Edward R. Murrow.
We'll be monitoring our shortwave for the report. We should be getting it in a few minutes.
Well, until then, let's enjoy this number from Vera Lynn, one of our GI favorites in England during the war, I understand. We'll meet again on the Martin and McKenna Show on station KUWS.
Let's say goodbye with a smile, dear, just for a while, dear. We must part. Don't let this parting upset you. I'll not forget you, sweetheart. We'll meet again. Don't know where, don't know when, but I know we'll meet again some sunny day. Keep smiling through, just like you always do, till the blue skies chase those dark clouds far away. And I will just say hello to the folks that you know. Tell them you won't be long. They'll be happy to know that as I saw you go, you were singing this song. We'll meet again. Don't know where, don't know where. will just say hello to the folks that you know. Tell them you won't be long. They'll be happy to know that as I saw you go, you were singing this song. We'll meet again. Don't know where, don't know when, but I know we'll meet again some sunny day.
Indeed, Vera Lynn's "We'll Meet Again," and that one, I'm sure, brought many a tear to the eye of the English Tommy soldiers. Back again, Lou?
Anything to get out of that cold newsroom. We have a guest. Superior Evening Telegram publisher Morgan Murphy is here with his editorial comment. Thank you for coming in, Mr. Murphy.
I heard about your dilemma with the boiler guy, Lou, so I brought you a couple of egg and onion sandwiches and a peanut butter and mayo. I had someone else order them, though.
I understand there are certain foods it's best not to be associated with.
My topic tonight, Lou, is worker ingenuity in wartime. 30 American workmen who could have tended their machines without bestirring their brains have produced labor-saving suggestions which will save 112,500 man-hours a year for war production. One man had an idea that made it possible to reduce two operations to one, saving 4,197 man-hours a year. Another suggested a power knife to replace a hand operation, and that saved 1,500 man-hours. A third offered a workable method of increasing production on one shell-making operation by 150%. This, of course, is a principal secret of American production genius. Our workmen are not robots. They are human beings with imagination and assurance that their futures depend entirely upon what they can and will contribute to their jobs.
Thank you, Mr. Morgan Murphy, with the Superior Evening Telegram.
The sandwiches came to 4 bits, Lou.
Yes, of course.
Dust off your wallet, partner, and then get the crowbar out.
Cute.
We're waiting on Edward R. Murrow, folks. We expect it shortly, and until then, there's Tommy Dorsey and his orchestra on the sunny side of the street on the Martin and McKenna Show on station KUWS.
Thank you. getting stuck in that shade. Get hit. Don't be afraid. Move it on over. Feel yourself in the clover. Only hit one then. Who cares? Rich as Rockefeller.
We've just enjoyed Tommy Dorsey and his orchestra on the sunny side of the street on station KUWS. Is it coming in now, Lou?
Well, yes, Jack. This is Edward R. Murrow of the Columbia Broadcasting System reporting from somewhere in England after a bombing run over Germany.
Last night, some of the young gentlemen of the RAF took me to Berlin. The pilot was called Jock. The takeoff was smooth as silk. The wheels came up, and D-Dog started the long climb. Soon we were out over the North Sea. Dave, the navigator, asked Jock if he couldn't make a little more speed. We were nearly 2 minutes late. Jock's quiet voice came through the intercom. That'll be flak ahead. We were approaching the enemy coast. We flew steady and straight. And soon the flak was directly below us. The flak began coming up, but none of it close. By this time, we were about 30 miles from our target area in Berlin. That 30 miles was the longest flight I have ever made. Suddenly, a tremendous big blob of yellow light appeared dead ahead, another to the right and another to the left. We were flying straight for them. And then, with no warning at all, D-Dog was filled with an unhealthy white light. I was standing just behind Jock and could see all the seams on the wings. His quiet Scots voice beat into my ears. Steady, lads. We've been coned. His slender body lifted, half out of the seat, as he jammed the control column forward and to the left. We were going down. Jock was wearing woolen gloves with the fingers cut off. I could see his fingernails turn white as he gripped the wheel. And then I was on my knees, flat on the deck, or he had whipped the dog back into a climbing turn. The knees should have been strong enough to support me, but they weren't. And the stomach seemed in some danger of letting me down, too. I picked myself up and looked out again. It seemed that one big searchlight, instead of being 20,000 feet below, was mounted right on our wingtip. D-Dog was corkscrewing. As we rolled down on the other side, I began to see what was happening to Berlin. The clouds were gone, and the sticks of incendiaries from the preceding waves made the place look like a badly laid out city with the streetlights on. The small incendiaries were going down like a fistful of white rice thrown on a piece of black velvet. The cookies, the 4,000-pound high explosives, were bursting below like great sunflowers gone mad. And then as we started down again, still held in the lights, I remembered that the dog still had one of those cookies and a whole basket of incendiaries in his belly, and the light still held it. And I was very frightened. Finally, we were out of the cone, flying level. I looked down, and the white fires had turned red. They were beginning to merge and spread, just like butter does on a hot plate. Jock and Boz, the bomb aimer, began to discuss the target. The smoke was getting thick down below. Boz said he liked the two green flares on the ground almost dead ahead. He began calling his directions. And just then, a new bunch of big flares went down on the far side of the sea of flame and flare that seemed to be directly below us. He thought that would be a better aiming point. Jock agreed, and we flew on. The bomb doors were open. Boz called his directions. Five left, five left. And then there was a gentle, confident upward thrust under my feet, and Boz said, "Cookie gone." A few seconds later, the incendiaries went, and D-Dog seemed lighter and easier to handle. I began to breathe and to reflect again that all men would be brave if only they could leave their stomachs at home. And we were heading home. For a little while, it was smooth sailing. We saw more battle, then another plane in flames. But no one could tell whether it was ours or theirs. We were still near the target. Dave, the navigator, said, "Hold her steady, skipper. I want to get an astral sight." and Jock held her steady, and the flak began coming up at it. It seemed to be very close. It was winking off both wings, but the dog was steady. Finally, Dave said, "Okay, Skipper, thank you very much." And a great orange blob of flak smacked up straight in front of us. And Jock said, "I think they're shooting at us." I'd thought so for some time. And he began to throw D for dog up, around, and about again. When we were clear of the barrage, I asked him how close the bursts were, and he said, "Not very close. When they're really near, you can smell them." That proved nothing, for I'd been holding my breath. Jack sang out from the rear turret, said his oxygen was getting low, thought maybe the lead had frozen. Titch, the wireless operator, went scrambling back with a new mask and a bottle of oxygen. Dave, the navigator, said we're crossing the coast. My mind went back to the time I had crossed that coast in 1938 in a plane that had taken off from Prague. Just ahead of me sat two refugees from Vienna, an old man and his wife. The co-pilot came back and told them that we were outside German territory. The old man reached out and grasped his wife's hand. The work that was done last night was a massive blow of retribution for all those who have fled from the sound of shots and blows on a stricken continent. We began to lose height over the North Sea. We were over England's shore. The land was dark beneath us. Somewhere down there below, American boys were probably bombing up fortresses and liberators, getting ready for the day's work. We were over the home field. We called the control tower, and the calm, clear voice of an English girl replied, "Greetings, D-Dog. You are diverted to Mulebag." We swung round, contacted Mulebag, came in on the flare path, touched down very gently, ran along to the end of the runway and turned left. And Jock, the finest pilot in bomber command, said to the control tower, "D-Dog, clear of runway." There were four reporters on this operation. Two of them didn't come back. Two friends of mine, Norman Stockton of Australian Associated Newspapers and Lowell Bennett, an American representing International News Service. There is something of a tradition amongst reporters that those who are prevented by circumstances from filing their stories will be covered by their colleagues. This has been my effort to do so. Berlin was a kind of orchestrated hell, a terrible symphony of light and flame.
Come in, Lord, knowing and afraid.
We come in him, oh, knowing and afraid. Come in, oh, knowing and afraid. Though there's one motor gone, we can still carry on. Come in, oh, knowing and afraid. What a show,
what a show,
what a fight,
what a fight.
Yes, we really hit our targets for tonight. How we sing as we limp through the air. Look below, there's our field over there. With our full crew aboard and our trust in the Lord. Coming in on a wing and a prayer. One of our planes was missing, 2 hours overdue. One of our planes was missing with all its gallant crew. The radio sets were humming, they waited for a word. Then a voice broke through the humming, and this is what they heard.
Oh, oh,
coming in on a wing and a prayer. Coming in on a wing and a prayer. There's one motor though we can carry on. Coming in on a wing and a prayer. Coming in on a wing and a prayer. I'm coming in on a wing and a prayer. Coming in on a wing and a prayer.
What a show.
What a show.
What a fight. Yes, we really hit our target for tonight.
How we sing as we flip through the air. Look below, there's a field over there.
With a full crew aboard and our trust in the Lord.
Come in on the wing and the bread.
Very fitting music of the Golden Gate Quartet, coming in on a wing and a prayer, following a very moving report by Edward R. Murrow. And I suppose he's every radio newsman's hero.
He holds all of us to a high standard. His wartime reports from London have brought home the reality of war and what we're fighting against.
The parents and wife who will receive Gold Star insignias tomorrow night know that high price we pay. That's our show for tonight, friends. Thanks for huddling around the old Philco on this cold winter night. Fred Waring is up next, followed by News of the World at 7. Then the Tommy Dorsey Orchestra is on the air. Eddie Cantor is on at 8. And you can hear Mr. District Attorney at 8:30. We'll be back the same time, same place on your radio dial, the good Lord willing, and the creek doesn't rise to a higher level. For Lou Martin, then, this is Jack McKenna wishing you a warm, safe night.
You have been listening to Radio Superior 1943, a weekly production presented by KUWS Radio and Wisconsin Public Radio. Radio Superior is produced and written by Mike Simonson. Other performances by Don Mason, Joel Anderson. All events reported on Radio Superior 1943 are actual accounts from the editions of the Superior Evening Telegram. Join us next week at this time for more Radio Superior 1943. This is your announcer, Tony Jasmine, speaking. Good night.